agencies are the fastest way to get rich, but the slowest way to get wealthy.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there. On today's episode, we have Max, who goes by Marketing Max on Twitter. Max is the previous owner of Hell's Creative, a seven-figure agency that helps brands get more out of their ad spend by generating high-performance videos and graphics to turn prospects into buyers that average 4x return on their ad spend. Max has since sold Hell's Creative to Storia and has since shifted to building Growth Hacks Weekly, a weekly newsletter sharing his best growth hacks, well, weekly. Max, welcome to the show, man.
Really, really big fan of your guys' show, and mostly because a lot of my friends have been on it. So thanks for including me.
Well, we're excited to have you on. And I feel like we were just riffing a little bit before the show started. And I think you're the kind of guy who we can just like jump right into things versus like throwing a couple softball questions. Cause like you seem like you come prepared, that you've really thought about like a lot of the stuff over your career. So like, I just want to start off with something probably like going in reverse and almost starting at the end. Of you ran Hell's Creative, you grew into doing millions of dollars in sales every single year. And just recently, I want to say it's been like a month or two now at this point, you sold your agency. When I hear of people selling their business, it's very often thought of as like, congrats, like you sold your business. I'd love to know why you sold your business. And now that the dust has settled and you're like 30 to 60 days out, is there any seller's remorse almost?
Yeah, so my friends call me Max two things, because I always have two things to say about everything. So there are really, you know, a long list of reasons why I sold my agency, but it really comes down to two things. Number one, just pure burnout. Running an agency and scaling an agency takes a lot of time and energy and stress. If you're not thinking about your clients, you're thinking about your employees. If you're not thinking about your employees, you're thinking about where your next client's going to come from and what your retention rate is. And there's just so many moving parts to the business compared to a lot of other types of businesses that I was just really burnt out after 5 years of doing it. Even though I really built a really good engine, I built a really good machine that I really didn't have to do any of the client servicing work. I really just kind of brought in clients because I was really good at sales, handed them off to my team, and then I really didn't speak to them again. So even though I built a lot of good systems and process and were able to scale the business pretty fast in the last 2 years, once I really started to figure my stuff out, I was still just really burnt out. So that's the first reason. And the second reason is just opportunity. Like at the end of the day, agencies are amazing for cash flow, and they're the fastest way to get up to making 10, 20, 30K a month. And, you know, getting kind of past that freelance to real business path or level, I should say. But I believe that my skill set and my time and my energy and money is better spent on opportunities with higher leverage. And I've always been really fascinated by software. I saw the no-code world kind of slowly starting to bubble up on Twitter, started dabbling around with some no-code tools, and really just thought that there's so much more opportunity outside the agency space to make a bigger impact and make more money, that it's time to sell my business, take some of the cash off the table. I feel like there's a recession coming, or a really big economic downturn coming. So I want to have some cash at my disposal and start some of these other interesting or new or niche businesses that I'm passionate about and have had ideas for a long time.
What sort of scale were you at when you sold, and did you contemplate potentially kind of not selling and continuously scaling it out too?
Yeah, so we had about 20 clients on retainer. It fluctuated around there. Average client was roughly $5,000 to $7,000 a month. You could kind of do the math of what we were doing MRR wise. Profit margin was really high because the majority of our team was overseas. And we could talk about that, but I kind of found this hack where you could pay really, really, really talented people in their 30s and 40s or like late 20s overseas. You could pay them double what they're used to getting for the same job locally. And they would work East Coast hours, or basically East Coast hours, and they had a ton of experience because they'd worked with US companies before. So that helped me keep my margins low. But yeah, 20 clients, average five-ish plus K a month per client, 12 full-time team members. And sorry, I forgot the second part of your question. Just how we'll scale.
No, just curious in terms of, Was it a decision where you like you knew you were definitely wanting to sell, or had you kind of contemplated, hey, I might just scale this out for the next 5 years and keep going?
That's right. Thank you. Sorry. For the 6 months right before I sold, I was really kind of at a fork in the road. I was almost ready to promote my COO to CEO, and I was going to step away and let them completely run the business. And I would just go focus on the stuff that I'm doing now, or that I plan to, you know, do more now. But at the end of the day, it wasn't about that particular person. It was just about, I wanted an exit under my belt. I wanted the cash off the table. And I knew that I could never fully step away from the business. It's a client business. At the end of the day, I'm still the CEO. I'm still the founder on LinkedIn. And so at the end of the day, the buck stops with me. And that's still, even if I only check in with that person once a month or once a year, like Andrew Wilkinson talks about doing, where he has a portfolio of businesses and he has like one big, you know, full day every year where he goes deep with them. And then he has like a monthly email report that they send. Even if I did that, I would still always have one foot in that pool where I'm a balls to the wall, like go all in on something. I need as much time, energy, and money to go all in deep on something as possible. And so to answer, you know, Connor's question from before, do I have any regrets? Like, no, zero regrets. 6 months later, best thing I ever did. Just zero, 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 zero regrets. Burnout is so real. I think most entrepreneurs, especially in the agency space, don't talk about it. I was literally just recording a podcast before this on someone else's podcast. And he was an agency owner. And he's like, dude, what do you do about the stress? And he has one employee, and it's just, no one talks about it. So yeah, zero regrets. Who knows, maybe in 5 years, if one of my new projects hasn't made it to where I want it to, then I'll come back on and I'll tell you guys that it was all the biggest mistake of my life and I ruined it. But no regrets at all.
And you're 29 right now, which I feel like, in my opinion, I think you did the right thing, because I think exactly one of the things that you just said earlier about having a win under your belt, it makes a drastically large difference in almost any facet of your life, right? We sold our business 2 years ago when we were in college, and like Gio like had the foresight to go and think about getting like a Forbes article written about it all. And like, we just like reached out to a bunch of reporters. And dude, I cannot tell you enough how much credibility that gives you going and doing almost anything else, right? So I do think, like, you know, the difference between selling a seven-figure business and running an eight-figure business, they're the same exact thing, honestly, in terms of like a credibility that it gives you when going and chatting with a lot of people. Is like, the difference is you now have that headline and that PR piece as well of when you sold it, that you can now go and parlay into other things, add credibility, bring in investors, bring in partners for future things. So I definitely believe that you did the right thing because it was your first business. Now, I will go and say, because of this podcast, we have a lot of young entrepreneurial people who either are running things today or just starting things that I'll frequently go and get hit up by on Twitter. And they'll say like, Connor, I want to start something. Don't know what to do. Like, what do you have in mind? And the advice I always tell them almost every time without fail is go start an agency, like find a niche, right? Whether it's email, ads, creative, whatever it is, SEO, right? Like go find a niche, build an agency there, learn skills, get the cash flow, because most people just have no idea what it's like to go from zero to $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month in free cash flow and get that experience. And so that's like a really nice part, because a lot of times what they'll try to do is they'll try to build up like an e-commerce business or a type of business that just eats up cash real quick. And they're like, I'm not making any money. We're like, okay, no shit. But like, you're creating like equity out of it all. I'm like, go build up this agency and then go and take all of that profit and that team and that talent that you're hiring from that agency and parlay it into doing kind of what you're doing now, which is like the softer piece. Like, I think the question I would like to know now is, if you were to go and kind of start another agency, let's say start another agency, would you ever maybe buy another agency, something like that? Would you then go and do that and use that team to not only create cash flow for your new projects, but also use that talent internally to build up these software projects and market, you know, these e-commerce brands, maybe if you want to start something like that?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for saying that you think I made the right choice. I get a lot of people who DM me, or even like when it first happened, they were like, what are you going to do with your life? Like, they thought my identity was tied to Hell's Creative. And it's just not the case. So appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, would I start another agency? Every day that I launch one of these SaaS projects and they kind of flop or they just don't take immediately, in the market, I'm like, I'm going to start an agency. Like, it's just so easy. And like, I know the process and the systems, and now I'm a consultant and advisor to like 4 or 5 different agencies that I meet with regularly to help them figure out their process and systems, just because I built one of the most process and system oriented agencies, I really believe, ever. Like, I've met a lot of agency owners, like literally hundreds, and I ask them all about their process and their systems, and I show them kind of our checklists that we have for everything. Like, oh my God, like, we would be so much more efficient if we did that. So would I start another agency? Probably not. Again, if 5 years comes down the road and all the things that I'm betting on now and the things I'm launching now don't take, then yeah, absolutely. I like to say that agencies are the fastest way to get rich, but the slowest way to get wealthy. Like, you could make money real quick, but if you want real, like, generational wealth, there's only 3 to 5 people I've ever seen that started an agency and got a private jet. But there's literally hundreds of people that started a software business and that got a private jet. So there you go. But if I were to start an agency today, it would 100% be a productized agency. One of these like Design Joy or Design Pickle or Marvel.so or Video Husky, these like $1,000 a month flat fee for like quote unquote unlimited design or unlimited SEO or unlimited video editing or whatever. I'd use a tool like ManyRequest or SPP.co to just handle the entire technology behind it. I hire a team of freelancers to handle all the requests. And I just run Facebook ads all day. I mean, this is literally the playbook. And just run Facebook ads all day trying to get people to sign up for a free 7-day trial or like a $1 7-day trial, see how many of those people convert, and then just scale that up and then hire a person to run that and scale it. Because it really is a amazing source of cash flow. And I was listening to a podcast the other day with Andrew Wilkinson. He's like my idol. Like, I think the way he's doing it is brilliant, perfect. Not sure. Are you guys familiar with Andrew? You know, he started MetaLab. For anyone that doesn't know, he started a web dev agency or development agency, grew it to kind of a similar size of Hell's Creative, more revenue, but similar process and clients and team. And then he hated it, hired someone to run that, and then just started building his own SaaS and then acquiring SaaS. And I think that model is brilliant. I'm trying to do something similar, just layering Marketing Max on top of it. But yeah, I mean, he was asked on a podcast last week if tiny capital, if all of the different software projects would be possible without Meta Labs, without his agency. And he didn't really give a clear answer, but I think the takeaway was no. Like, it's really hard to build software, to market software, to grow software businesses without cash flow. So, you know, would I do it? Like I said, if 5 years goes down the road, if my buyout from Story is gone and none of these projects take, then yeah, I'll start 5 agencies. Would I buy an agency? Definitely not. No way. No way in hell I would ever acquire an agency.
Why?
It was funny. Sorry.
Why? Like, out of curiosity, because we don't have to get into the specifics of your agency, but I know most agencies don't sell at nearly the valuations of e-commerce or SaaS, even realistically, not nowhere close to SaaS. But I'd be curious, because like, typically you can get clients and cash flow and all that kind of stuff at a relatively low multiple. And if it sounds like you're as systems and process oriented as you are, you could probably just go in, cut a shit ton of overhead expenses, and then just make it more profitable now.
Yeah, all good points, all for the case of buying an agency. I think it really just comes down to talent. At the end of the day, an agency lives and dies on its talent that services the business, right? On the other side of it, you also need leads and you need client acquisition. That part's easy for me. No problem getting clients, you know, 70,000 followers on TikTok, almost 10,000 followers now on Twitter, like, you know, large email lists, large LinkedIn following too. Like, I can get clients anywhere. I know how to send cold emails, cold LinkedIn. Getting clients is the easy part. It's hiring the right people, training them, keeping them inspired, keeping them happy to wake up in the morning when they stare at, you know, a list of 30 things they have to do today, or a list of, you know, just meetings after meetings after meetings after meetings after meetings. So why wouldn't I buy an agency? I think when you acquire an agency, it immediately creates strain and pressure and a big, vague gray bubble over everyone's head. That's like, what's going to happen? The promotion I was promised 6 months ago, is that still going to happen? Am I going to get a raise? Am I going to get fired? Is someone going to come in and take the promotion that I wanted? It creates so much strain, where on the other side of that, I'm really good at client retention. I like to think that I'm really good at hiring, or just had a lot of at-bats at it. Anyone who had the amount of at-bats that I've had with it would be pretty good. So I love, when it comes to hiring, sitting and finding the right person. I want to go find the diamond in the rough. And I have, I think, just a natural ability to help make that person feel special, to help make that person feel like they're part of something bigger than they are. If the other person who sold the agency did that, they have an allegiance to that person. So building trust with me is going to be really hard. And if the other person that didn't have that, or if the other person that ran the agency didn't have that, well, then they're just going to be really skeptical that the next person that acquires the agency is going to be the same way. So I think acquiring talent is such a gray area, that unless there was like such a clear business that was like so easy and such a perfect niche that I believed in, I wouldn't buy an agency.
How do you make sure then that you're getting the right talent and you're hiring the right people overseas and you're, you know, either testing them correctly or interviewing them correctly to make sure you can actually build up a scalable team for, you know, if someone's running an agency, or I'm assuming it's also relevant if you're doing e-commerce or anything else, how do you build up that really successful overseas talent pool?
Yeah, so there's a few tricks, a couple really interesting nuggets here to start this off. So I believe it might have changed, but the second largest audience on Indeed.com is India. Maybe now it's the third or the fourth, but Indeed.com outside of America, their largest audience, I believe, outside of America is India. So you can go on Indeed.com for free and post looking for graphic designer, looking for Facebook ad media buyer, willing to pay this much, must speak perfect English. And then what I would do is I would have a virtual assistant or someone on my team comb through all the resumes, pick out the best 10. We would email them saying, hey, can you send us a 5-minute video or a 3-minute video? You know, why you want this job, why you think you're perfect for the job. Within 60 seconds of that video, we'll be able to tell if they're a good fit for our clients, for our team, their background, how well do they speak on camera, outside of the language barrier, just like as a human, right? Like we're all on Zoom, like we could pick up cues even though we're not in person. So that really, really, really helped. And then, like I said, the trick was just, hey, you know, I'll pay you 50 to 100% more than what you would make at the same job locally, but I need you to work, you know, until 1 or 2 a.m. local your time. And that way you're available for calls, you're on Slack for us, because we operated off of East Coast time zone. And after we did that for like 6 months and hired, what, 4 or 5 people overseas, we had the overseas team kind of collectively come to us and say like, hey, we really aren't comfortable with like the daylight savings time. We're now working to like 3 or 4 in the morning. Like we aren't comfortable. So then we adjusted, right? Like we said, okay, no client meetings after 2 p.m. Eastern, so they can all go to bed at 1. And it just became a system like anything else, where you're just perfecting it as it goes. But posting on Indeed and then posting on LinkedIn, I believe also that India is LinkedIn's second largest audience outside of the US, might even be the first. And LinkedIn actually has a video feature built into it where you can request that people send a video and when they apply to your job. So that's mainly how I source talent overseas. The other part of it is I got really lucky. You gotta mention, you always have to admit when you got lucky. I ended up hiring an amazing media buyer in New York City when we had an office in New York, who was on a visa because she was from India. And it was relatively easy when it was like, hey, we want to hire more people. Well, her sister works in advertising, so why don't we go hire your sister? And then her sister went to a school in India specifically for advertising, so why don't we hire your friends? And then I asked her to introduce me to the person that ran admissions at the advertising school in India. And then that was just like, you know, I opened up, you know, the honey.
Just opened there. Up the top of funnel for all the applicants. And now you're getting the best of the best.
That's for sure. Okay. For sure. And then the other hack is like, you got to hire people with experience, right? And so what a lot of people don't realize is, specifically for advertising, the biggest ad agencies in the world all have a presence in India, like Ogilvy, McCann Erickson, Shiat Day, like all of these huge, you know, multi-billion dollar ad agencies that are working with Coca-Cola and that are working with all these other brands have agencies in India. They have to speak good English. They're used to working on the same type of work. I can go to that. And they notoriously pay them shit. Excuse my French. Like they pay them awful because they're like, oh, it's India. Like we can get away with paying them less. So it was relatively easy for me to meet someone who was working at, you know, Leo Burnett in India. I was making 600 USD a month and said, hey, I'll pay you $1,500 a month, but you got to stay up until 2 a.m. Well, if you're 25, 26, 27 years old, you just got married or you want to get married, like that's a lot of money. If you're listening to this, you're making 100 grand a year, right? And you're like, yo, I'll pay you 200 grand a year. But I mean, most people who listen to this are entrepreneurs, but still, like if you're making 100 grand a year and someone comes to you and is like, hey, you got to work till 1 a.m., but and no meetings on Fridays, but you got to stay up till you know 1 or 2 a.m., like a lot of people would take that for a couple of years.
Yep. Yeah, totally agree. And I feel like that's the big thing that a lot of people don't understand, especially on Twitter, who might go and like read these conversations about like outsourcing or VAs or whatever. And they're like, that's terrible wage. It's like, no, it's terrible wage. It's $1.50 an hour that they're actually getting paid in their home country. Like we're actually going in 3, 4, or 5X-ing it. So there's definitely some gray area there. Have you had any experience with, I'm hearing more and more specifically over the last like 3 to 6 weeks that there is a crazy talent pool coming out of Central America and Colombia and a lot of these countries. Have you seen a big shift over there too? Or is it mostly still over in India everywhere you're working?
Yeah, so there's outside of India, which is where I hired most of my talent from, I use these other two companies to source talent from the Philippines and from South America. The one from the Philippines is called Magic. I think it's getmagic.com. They have an amazingly easy, way to scale up and down talent. So
they're the ones that started off as like an iPhone app or like a text.
I think so. Where they were like virtual assistant, like they can do anything for you, $10 an hour.
Yeah.
So they now have a portal where it's super easy. You say, hey, I want graphic designers with 3 years experience. And it's always $10 an hour, no matter who you hire. And then they'll immediately show you videos that people saying like, hi, I'm so-and-so, this is my background, this is that. And you can either request to get an interview with them or get a meeting with them, or you can work with someone and you say what you want and they'll hand pick from their database. And you can say, okay, for the first month, I only want 10 hours a week. And if that person's really good, okay, now I want 20 hours a week. Oh, we just signed 3 new clients. I'll go up to full-time. You pay them $10 an hour. You pay them $10 an hour. They pay the person $5 an hour. And we had two employees come to us through that, where we just, you know, we weren't sure we needed a full-time employee, started off $10 an hour. That's specifically for the Philippines. To your point, Connor, about South America, we worked with this other company called Athena, A-T-H-Y-N-A. I think it's athena.io. They help source talent from South America and Middle America, or whatever, South America and whatever middle part of the whole America is. And I interviewed a lot of people from there. I think I ended up hiring like one salesperson, actually, one sales lady. I just always preferred hiring from India for some reason. I don't know. The talent that we got from India was always better and didn't mind working later. And as weird as this sounds, I thought the accents were actually better. Like the people in India spoke better English and didn't have such a crazy barrier when
interesting
clients than the South America talent that we interviewed was, or even hired was.
Yeah, that 60-second like intro video is honestly a godsend anytime that you're trying to go and interview people. Like, all right, here's actually
you're talking about the video of the guy
I'll bring that one up too, actually. All right, so I just hired like 3 different roles, right? And one of them was like customer support role, one of them was a real estate operations role that Gio and I hired, and then the third one we've just been like kind of an ongoing like assistant kind of hire that we're looking for. So I had to go through like 700 applications or whatever in the last 2 weeks, which I understand for anyone listening to this that actually does any recruiting, that's nothing, but for me I'm like, oh my god, my eyes are about to start bleeding. So the biggest things that'll go and immediately weed people out that will save you so much time is, say in your application, submit 4 things. You submit a 60-second video of like you just saying like why you want to apply for this role. Doesn't it, like literally doesn't even have to really even be about this role. I just want to hear you speak. 2, a resume, obviously, just to kind of see like where you've worked before, and ideally like have some kind of like job description or something like that on there, because that'll honestly just weed out a lot of people with no experience who've never done anything before that you want to hire for. Number 3 is include like just this one keyword, just so like I'm sure that like you read the actual thing. Like it can literally even just be the freaking company name. And like, sure, some people might get away because they were going to say the company name anyway, but like just say that. And then four is an internet speed test. I think you can literally, I think it's speedtest.net. Like typically what I'll do is I'll have them submit a speed test. And then if I take them to the actual interview round, then I'll just be like on Zoom real quick, like, hey, can you quickly share your screen with me? Like, just do this again. Like, I just want to make sure quickly that like we are on the same, that this was actually like your IP address, not just like a regular screenshot. So those four things just saves you infinite amount of time. Cause like, I'm not going to hire somebody with like 20 megabytes per second for like upload speed or whatever the unit is of internet speed. Like not going to do that. Like some people were submitting tests that were like higher than mine. And I'm not saying I have the best internet in the world, but like when I see that, I'm like, oh, okay. Like that could potentially work. And then we'll jump on the call and it'll be like, well, no, I was actually at my friend's house. And I'm like, okay, I understand. Like that was a fake test result. The story that Gio was alluding to was basically I jump on a call with a guy that we're trying to go and hire for a real estate operations manager. And we're like just chatting last week. And I don't want to say like I talk down to anyone in these interviews, but I definitely speak much slower. And I speak as though like there might be somewhat of a language barrier to make sure that like no one's like getting confused on anything. And I'm like, hey, like really great to meet you. Like, here's what we're kind of like looking for the role, like laying it out. And he's like, oh yeah, man, that all sounds good. And I was like, kind of like that was a little like slang, okay, like let me like test him out again. Like I say, like, so like what have you been doing before? And he's like, oh man, like I'm actually from California, like from San Francisco, like I'm just out here in the Philippines now, and just kind of looking for like some work. In the meantime, I actually used to work for like Bank of America, was in their bankruptcy department, then previously worked for another guy who was like running and managing Airbnb operations. And I was like, dude, like full stop, like I thought you were like didn't speak English that well at first, like you were just California, like you're just fully one of us. And we went down the whole interview process, didn't hire the guy because like his references didn't check out. And I was like, it was one of those like, this is a too good to be true kind of situation that was kind of sketching me out. I was like, why does this guy want $8 an hour but has like 20 years of experience and is like totally American? I was like, something about this just seems a little fishy, and I feel like I kind of just like wanted to trust my gut there. But this is a long story, long-winded way of basically saying, try to run a few tests when you're applying or posting any of these jobs. It'll just save you going through applications.
I love the internet one is fun. Like that I've never heard of is great. I use the keyword one all the time, specifically on Upwork and Freelancer. My keyword's panda. And so I'll always put it at the bottom. I'm like, please mention the word panda to make sure that I know you read this and they're not submitting like a templated, you know, job submission or cover letter. I always say that. And then you get people that are like panda, panda, panda. And then you get people who don't say it. So like, it does help, but the internet thing is really smart. That's I'm going to have to write that down. That's great.
Yeah.
It's
speedtest.net. And honestly, like the only reason I'm doing it now is because we've gotten into situations before where like I hire somebody who's an all-star, they're amazing. And then they're just totally like, you, like if I am stuck on bad internet, I can't perform well, even if I know exactly what I have to go and do. So it's just like one of those huge handicaps that you can kind of avoid.
So especially now, like if I'm sending them a Zoom or a Loom video and the instructions can't load, it's always an issue. I was specifically referring to the other one, Connor, where he had some crazy accent that was totally unexpected.
That was another one. Just basically had somebody submit a video. Yeah. I was like, this person looks amazing. And then like the video starts, I was like, he cannot cold call people in Texas. I was like, you know, there's one thing to cold call someone in like the Northeast or whatever. Texas people already don't do well with cold calls. And I was like, they will definitely not do well with cold calls with your accent. I'm sorry.
I want to dive into a little bit some of the kind of the SaaS stuff that you're alluding to in terms of I think I can guess why SaaS, but you're going from an agency route to a SaaS route. You know, you have way lower overhead, potentially no cost of goods sold, all the metrics, everything that makes sense. What are you looking at in terms of, you know, are you pulling ideas from your agency days? What actual projects are you tackling? And then are you also pulling in the similar overseas talent to kind of manage that and scale that operation as well?
Yeah. So in early 2019, I was hating my agency. I was really like, I want to go do SaaS. Like, I hate my agency. And I'm an idea guy. Like I often like to tell people that I'm just an idea guy constantly trying to prove to myself that I can execute, because I have ideas every day, all day, forever. Like just so many ideas. So in early 2019, when I was really just hating the agency, I was like, I'm going to sell the agency now. Like three employees, I could probably get, I don't know, like a dollar for it. Like I'm just going to sell the agency and go do this. I started a notes tab on my phone called SaaS Ideas. And over the last, 3 years now, almost not four, three, not good with math. Even though I worked on Wall Street, funny side note, but not good with math. But for the last 3+ years, I now have more than 350 SaaS ideas in that list.
You do realize what the rest of this episode is about to become, right?
I was afraid of that. So side note on that. So I have about 350 SaaS ideas. Below that, I have, I think yesterday I just crossed 60 agency ideas. When you're like, you know, what kind of agency would you start? I literally have 60. Most of, like half of the SaaS and half the agencies are shit, but they're still ideas, right? They're still just like, you'd never do that. Interesting. Sometimes I just copy and paste like another agency that I think is doing something cool. And I'm like, just copy this. Like half of them are either shit or they're just like, this guy's doing it great. Figure out a way to you know, differentiate yourself from these guys. They would crush it. And then I have 15 e-commerce ideas. And then I have a couple other like random ideas, but yeah, there's 350 SaaS ideas in there. I tend to star the ones that I think are like actually legit, actual, you know, could become actual businesses. And, you know, every few weeks, every few months when I'm bored, for the last year, really, even when I had my agency, I would just go on Upwork, post like, I need help building this. And then I would try to launch it. My friends say I have a lot of things in the graveyard. Like I have a lot of just code of apps that are maybe 90% built, 90% finished. And then because I'm just an idea guy constantly trying to make shit, that I just see a new shiny object, new shiny idea. I'm like, ooh, I have to get this one launched live because someone else is going to steal this idea because it's about influencer marketing and TikTok's blowing up. So I have to do that. And then I'm just like, okay, I'll cover that one later. So I have a long list of all those in my Notion, which is like the ideas that move from my notes app in my phone to Notion. Those are that's the real once gems. But
yeah. Okay. Wait. All right. Yeah. So I do want to dive into a couple of these though, because you don't have to give away your top gems or like the things you're definitely going to build in the next 5 years, whatever. But I kind of almost want to start on the agency ideas side of things and then kind of move into the SaaS, because when I hear like you have 60 agency, like when I hear you have 300 something SaaS ideas, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Like, yeah, I have a SaaS for like integrating these two things and a SaaS for automating that, those two things, whatever. Like there's thousands of SaaS ideas. Yeah. And it's definitely my naiveness of not fully understanding all of the agency nuance. But when I think of agency ideas, I'm like, well, you can make one of 10 agencies. I was like, you can do like a Google PPC agency. You can do a Facebook PPC agency. You can do influencer marketing, email marketing, SMS, SEO, and then like, you know, one or two or three other types. And then you kind of pretty much tapped out. And of course, I say that, and you can actually go and do a lot of eight different agencies for different industries, right? I'm mostly thinking of like the e-commerce specific ones, but I would love to know like two or three agency ideas that specifically, since it sounds like you don't want to start another agency, that people probably have not heard of before that you think could be big. Yeah. Cause I think when I think of this kind of stuff, I'm like, I can go start this agency, but like that's been done a million times before. Not saying it's not profitable, but just, you know, yeah, more difficult.
Yeah. Hey, let's do it. I'm pulling it up. I'm pulling it up now.
Okay, cool.
My list, and we'll just go through it.
And as a side note too, I also really like the idea of going from Apple Notes to Notion, for like the Notion being the winning ideas and Apple Notes being the quick, because I think at this point I've downloaded every single notes app under the sun. And the only reason the Apple Notes app continues to win is for two reasons. One, it's just dead simple. You can't really overcomplicate it like all these other systems that you're like very easy to over engineer. And then it's just like, yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you because I want to guess what the second one is. I feel like I know the second.
You absolutely know what it is. Yeah.
Airplane mode.
Oh, no, but that's okay. That's actually a really good one. Yeah. You can't use Notion on airplane mode, which kind of sucks.
You can't use Notion on a plane. Sorry, I interrupted, but I was like, I bet it's this. It's so frustrating because I pretty much only listen to podcasts when I fly, which is at least like once a month. Mm. And I always get ideas when I'm on when I'm flying. So I pull up Notion, I'm like, oh shit, Notion doesn't work when you fly. It doesn't work offline. Sorry, I interrupted.
I use three notes apps. It's Apple Notes, Notion, and Workflowy. And Workflowy also does not work offline, which fucking sucks. Second one is just the fact that Apple Notes loads maybe 0.1 second faster or like 0.2 seconds faster. And I know that sounds like such like a first world problem, but like when you're writing down like 10 things a day, I don't know, like, what is that? That's a solid 6 minutes at the end of every year. Like, I feel like I would like to go and optimize for just like the thing that just opens up immediately. And yeah, the airplane mode's a big one too.
Yeah, the 0.1 second thing's interesting. So I've kind of gotten like a crash course in SaaS and SaaS development over the last 6 months since I sold my agency, and I've started to spend more time, not now full time, but started to spend more time building the SaaS. And I think it's because when you pull up the notes tab, you're writing the note and it's saving it to the actual phone's hard drive, and then it's backing it up to the cloud, where again, Notion doesn't have an offline mode. It doesn't save anything onto the phone. So when I
try, the most frustrating part is knowing that they could probably just implement it, but I know they probably got a bunch of other stuff, but yeah,
Notion is
pulling up an iPad and
yeah, Notion blows my mind, because when you really start to poke around Notion and look at their features and their UI of like their billing and everything, there's like, they're not a $1 billion company. Like, their product is not like Uber, where it like works 9.9 out of 10 times. Right. But they're a $1 billion company. Yes, they deserve it. Whoever founded it deserves all their money because it's an amazing tool. But like, their product doesn't have so many of like the very basic, easy features that all the other $1 billion company products have, like Canva and Uber and like, I don't know, like DoorDash. It just works. But Notion, sometimes I pull it up, it doesn't work. The offline mode thing, the UI on the settings, like the button doesn't click right all the time. Sometimes you have to like duplicate. It's like, anyways, I love and hate Notion. Love and hate Notion. All right, so I pulled up my list. There's a couple here that I can definitely share that I know I will never launch. And if this turns into my favorite, one of my favorite podcasts is My First Million. So if this turns into like a, you know, we all debate these ideas and talk good just and bad, riff, yeah. Totally game.
Cool.
All right, so one idea, a customer retention agency. So
okay.
specifically for e-com. So, so much of marketing and growth and sales for e-com is focused on getting your first customer. Mm-hmm. But very, 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 very few brands, unless you get to a bigger point where you can hire someone to focus on this, or hire at least a marketer that can spend some time on this, very few brands focus on the lifetime value of the customer. And there's so many more things you can do beyond just setting up a post-purchase email flow and setting up a post-purchase SMS flow. So I think there's an agency out there that could be easily millions of dollars a year in revenue working with small or medium-sized e-commerce brands that helps increase the LTV. And your goal, instead of return on ad spend or instead of marketing efficiency rate, is solely, did you increase the LTV as reported on Shopify every month?
So I got a cool niche example. I think that might be similar, which is super niche though, which is a marketing agency. Family has a car wash in Rhode Island, doing a lot of overhauls in terms of unlimited plans and stuff, and chatting with agencies. And there's a lot to say about if you can get the person on an unlimited plan to come a certain amount of times, so the first month and the second month and the third month, your customer LTV is, you know, they're staying for 2 years rather than 4 months. And so their entire pitch is, as you mentioned, you know, increase that long-term LTV. So that's really interesting.
I think the big question that I have on this one specifically, so first of all, I like it a lot because I agree, like any good agency focuses on revenue. And if you can't focus on revenue, like it's just really tough to go and scale out and maintain clients consistently, right? You probably know that better than anyone, right? With creative, you're easily able to say that campaign slapped. Of course, like we're going to go and keep on hella's creative. The question I have here is on a pricing model, right? So let's say my LTV on a customer, let's say I'm selling like five, I got five gum here, right? So let's say I'm just selling gum online and my average LTV for a customer is like $15. The question then becomes, okay, if I can get it to $22, that's worth a lot of money to me, right? But like at some point you might just tap out. Like you might just be like any LTV of a product, you know, maximum you're going to get is like $200. So my question becomes, as an agency standpoint, how would you go and build clients? Because I would think that over time, like you're 6 months in, great, we did the thing. Like we increased LTV 120%. And now we're starting to see like that's kind of where LTV is, and that's kind of where LTV lives. Would you basically charge it as like a percentage of that LTV growth that you have and work on like 6 month retainers, or how would you think about that?
Yeah, I never gamed this out, so this is fun. I love the idea of a percentage. I really love that. What I would do is, I would do all sorts of levers within that. So like, if we hit X percent increase, we get a bonus, but also if we hit X percent increase, the moment you decide to stop working with us, you still pay us out for another year because, you know, the year, we just increase your revenue for years to come. And so we want the back end. So, and what I would do is I'd give brands like two options, like pay us a flat fee or pay us. Yeah. Pay a flat fee or pay a flat fee plus a percent of the increase. But as soon as you stop working with us, you still got to pay us out.
Dude, what I think people should do for this is right now, the two biggest performance metrics in e-commerce specifically are LTV and CAC, right? And like, obviously people like if you're talking business as a whole, it's profit, it's gross margin, like it's a bunch of that kind of stuff. But like when you're talking about performance marketing, it's LTV and CAC. And so one of the things that I think people should do with this is realistically just tack this onto their Facebook ad or their actual like social advertising agency, because the entire point of that company is to lower your CAC. But if you now come in and say, hey, this side of the business lowers your CAC, this side of the business raises your LTV, now that you have this LTV growth as an agency, you can kind of be like, if you're not crushing it on the Facebook ads, which I know a lot of Facebook ad agencies aren't these days, you can kind of get away with being like, hey, listen, like, you know, your CAC just went up from like $50 to $60, but they're spending an extra $200 while they're here. So we're able to afford to spend more money to acquire these customers. It kind of like gives you like a little bit extra like pushing room on that.
Yeah, you could totally add this to like an existing agency. Like my belief is that the fastest way to scale an agency and make your life as least stress inducive as possible is to have one service and offer it to one core audience and try to scale that. So oftentimes I would think, oh, I can launch like a side business or a sister agency or just a new service offering inside of Hell's Creative for LTV or for SEO or for influencer marketing. It's the fastest way the influencers, or it's the fastest way the agencies die.
So then
they try to do too many things. They try to get their existing team to work on other projects. So as a whole, like to take a step back for 1 second, I don't think any agency should really add a bunch of different services unless you're big enough where you can have like a head of each department and you have enough money. People running agencies, at least that I see on Twitter, like they're doing somewhere between 10 to 50,000 bucks a month. Obviously there are tons doing, you know, 100,000, 200, 300,000 bucks a month. But when people talk about like building an agency, the fastest thing you can do to tank your agency is to add another service, I believe.
That's fair. Yeah. I also think from a client perspective, I want to work with the best email marketing agency. I want to work with the best social paid media agency. When you say, hey, we're full suite, I'm like, okay, you're kind of a jack of all trades. I'm kind of a jack of all trades. I can just be doing this myself. Like, I'd rather find somebody who's like, nope, all we do is email, and let us do email for you kind of thing. So maybe then for the LTV agency, your goal is to not even necessarily just sell to clients. You can sell to those other agencies who focus all on CAC and be like, hey, listen, convince your client to hire us, and we're going to make your life a hell of a lot easier.
What other agencies we got in here? Damn, I kind of want to go like spend 2 hours now just brainstorming agency and SaaS ideas, but
I'm totally game. I don't want to invite myself, but I'm totally game to do a whole hour, 2 hour episode where we just go through all of these, and I'll throw in some SaaS too. Okay. Let me do a traditional agency and then I'll do a non-traditional agency. So I think there should be a productized service agency specifically for headhunting, where you find talent. Like headhunters make a shit ton of money, right? But there's no productized version of this. And agencies are constantly hiring. So create a headhunting agency specifically for agencies where they just put you on a retainer for $1,000 a month. And just like on Design Pickle or Design Joy or any one of these things, you submit a ticket and say, hey, I'm hiring for this role. Here's who I'm looking for. And they just every day or every week submit back through the portal, hey, these are five resumes. because the companies and the companies, but also agencies who are growing really, really, really fast are always hiring. And if they're not specifically hiring, they certainly have enough money where, like, if the perfect candidate came up, they would hire them right away because it's a missed opportunity, right? It's a lot easier to find clients. It's a lot harder to find talent. So
that's almost like a creative mix of what you're talking about with Get Magic, kind of.
Yes.
To some extent.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like not like a marketing, it's not Facebook ads, it's not Google ads, but I think there's a huge need for it. And I think you can build process and systems just like you do with an agency, except the deliverable is not Facebook ads or an Instagram post through Design Pickle. The deliverable is a resume and an intro to the candidate.
And so it's kind of like, it's kind of like a support shepherd for a specific demographic, right? Do you know support shepherd?
Yeah, yeah. It's shepherd, but more of an ongoing retainer. So like shepherd, I believe they take 30% of their first year's salary, right? So if you're, or maybe 20, I don't know. Do you guys know the, how they charge now? But
I'm almost positive. You're right with 30%.
Yeah. And it's 30% of the first year. So if you hire someone, in the Philippines that they source for you, you pay them $1,000 for the, or you pay them $1,000 a month, 12 grand a year, you pay, you know, 3,500 or whatever the number is, as the fee to them. This would be like $1,000 a month flat fee. And they're just constantly sourcing new candidates for you. So that's one.
Love that idea.
That's one. Let's see. So you mentioned like Google ads. You were like, okay, there's only like 10 agencies, Facebook ads, Google ads. I think you could do a really niche one. This one's really good. Anyone who wants to steal this, go for it, because I'm never going to do this. I think you could create a Google ads agency that only does shopping campaigns for e-commerce brands. Shopping campaigns inside of Google ads are, for the right brands, extremely profitable, relatively easy to manage. You don't need to come up with creatives because you just keyword stuff everything in the Google Merchant Center, right? Literally go to brands that don't run any Google ads, that spend all their money on Facebook, and say, hey, we'll get you stood up just on shopping campaigns, because search is probably not going to work for you. Display will never really work for you. You can show crazy ROIs. And we had some clients who were generating like 9x return on ad spend for shopping campaigns, but their search campaigns were like a 0.5x. And so blended, it still came out to 6. And some of the clients didn't even know the difference, but like just doing shopping campaigns for e-commerce brands would crush.
And who would you, what type of products would you target for this? Because I got to imagine the only pushback I would have on this one now is like, okay, let's say you're approaching Allbirds, right? And they're like, Allbirds is in a brutal category where they're going after lifestyle shoes, right? So they're competing against the likes of Nike and Adidas and like a million other shoe companies. Are you based, would you try to go and target more niche products that might have a decent amount of keyword intent, but a low competitor rank? Or how would you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where I would start for sure, is finding the ones that, to your point, have high volume, but low competition. But Allbirds would be a perfect case study, I think, for this agency. They'd be a perfect client. Not perfect in the fact of size, because they have their own probably in-house team or agency that does all the different Google Ads things. But that product would be perfect, because if you type in best shoe for runners, there's so many different shoes that come up on the right side. If you have a good enough website, and that's something you might be able to throw in on the agency side too, is like running A/B tests on the product page, where people go actually after clicking on the shopping ad. But yeah, I mean, that alone would crush. And it's so much easier than saying, hey, we do Google ads specifically for, we do Facebook ads for. So many up and coming e-commerce brands, they only focus on TikTok and Facebook, and saying, hey, we've done the research, listen to us. You don't need to do anything with Google ads except for shopping. And it's so easy to set up these campaigns. Once you get it going, you can literally charge $2,000 a month, not even hop into it. I don't recommend that. That's how a lot of agents suck, but your hours spent to revenue would be, your margins would be insane.
And I was going to say, I got to imagine too, just doing that and only focusing on that versus saying, hey, we're a full stack paid media agency, it would probably mean that you can go and create crazy specialized ops, which then means you can theoretically get away with hiring maybe lower level talent to just do the operations and have one person kind of think about the strategy on the high end. So your margins would probably be pretty nice too.
100%. And I think you could, if you wanted, I don't know if I would do it this way, but you could run it through many requests or spp.co and charge like $500 a month, like no matter how much money you're spending, and just make it, you never have to get on the phone with the client. Everything, they give you access through the portal. They send requests through the portal. You send reports through the portal, and you can scale that so quickly. I mean, damn, like,
okay,
just literally run Facebook ads to Shopify stores and say, hey, like, for $500 a month, you know, you can do all sorts. We can spend a whole hour talking about that particular business, but yeah, that would be great.
Okay. I know you got to wrap up in the next 180 seconds. So the last thing that I want to kind of wrap up here with is kind of a call to action for anyone who's listening to this. Cause I know at this point now your main goal is to kind of build and scale these SaaS businesses. And I got to imagine there's going to be some people who are listening to this afterwards who are like, kind of want to work with Max. Like, I would want to, like, riff on some of this kind of stuff with him. Is there a SaaS idea that you're, like, on the fence about wanting to start and build to kind of, like, give people, like, a taste of something that maybe they can go and reach out and say, hey, either one, I'll help you build that if you market it, or vice versa. Like, even if they don't want to do that one, they at least, like, gives them, like, a taste to want to reach out and be like, hey, let's look at that list of 300 other ideas and, like, let's build something together.
That's really tricky.
I know it's a tough question to end on, but I think that despite it being a tough question to end on, I think it'll be a high value thing worth, even if you get one person to reach out, it might be worth it.
No, I love the question. It's great. I'm like pulling up my list now to see like what idea maybe I'm on the fence about, or I don't know. I mean, my whole thing is like now I'm trying to do less. I'm trying to like launch less and like focus more on marketing the ones that I have. Man, I don't know. That's tricky. That's really tricky. I'm going to come up with one. Give me a minute. This is hard.
No.
I have like 300.
I know. It can even be one that you're like, this could work, but like not fully baked out. Or if you don't want to go and curate it, we can even just do your most recent one.
All right. Because we're talking about agency stuff, number 310 on the list. I'm just like literally reading all my last like 50, 60. What about 309? Audience needle. I don't even know half this stuff. 309, audience needle. Finding the needle in your audience haystack. It combs through your email list and pulls out the most interesting, legit big people on the list based on their email domain. This person works at Canva. Canva just raised $300 million or matches their email to LinkedIn so that we know their title and company. I came up with that at some point. That's number 309. That'd be a cool SaaS. Like, look at your like Twitter followers, like your email, and come up with that.
I think that would be super cool too, especially because I know that there's a big trend specifically in B2B marketing. And maybe this trend is a little bit over now, so I might be a little late on this, but like account-based marketing entirely, where like you figure out like if you're selling enterprise, like, hey, who are my top 100, my top 250, my top 1,000 accounts that I really care about going after? And so if you're able to go and turn around to a company like Salesforce and say, hey, Salesforce, heads up, GE just signed. This is a terrible example because they would already know this. But like GE already like just signed up for like your marketing letters, whatever like that. Now like you can go notify a bunch of your sales reps to like reach out to specifically to that person and see if they're like the person in charge. So could be a good enterprise SaaS tool as well.
That could be a good one. I mean, I that one could be great. I have three other ones like 303 could crush.
What is 303? I gotta hear 303. You can't just like say that and then.
No, I'm just like, I'm like reading through these. I'm like, I don't know. So a lot of these, I think like the juice might not be worth the squeeze. Like figuring out how to get in front of the right audience and like what you'd be able to, the max you'd be able amount to charge is not worth how much it would cost to market it. But 303, like I've seen a few of these tools exist, but they're kind of shit. A really good Google Analytics auditor tool. So if you could, again, run Facebook ads to every Shopify brand saying, hey, log into your Google Analytics and within 5 minutes, we'll tell you where people are dropping off on your site, like which core, like which age group has the highest conversion rates. That way you can go target them on Facebook ads, like something that literally just like crawls your Google Analytics and then gives you a bunch of insights in 5 minutes or in like 60 seconds. That would be super freaking insightful. No idea how to build that.
If somebody is looking to go and build this and you're like, the juice might not be worth the squeeze on something like this, I will just say the first company I ever worked for was a software company called Drift. They literally are a chatbot and they scaled it up and was selling like $2,000 per seat and created like a $1 billion company out of what was just at the beginning of the idea, just a chatbot for like regular SaaS websites. So,
okay,
I think marketing is a big part of this.
Yeah. So it's funny you mentioned Drift. So I wrote number 362 this morning. That literally this morning I had this idea because someone cold emailed me for a tool similar to Lead Feeder. If you're familiar with Lead Feeder, where like if someone lands on a website, it'll track the IP address and it'll find out who actually is visiting your website. And it'll create a list of all those people. That way you can go email them, or you could like see who's who the actual human who's visiting your website is. And so I had this idea this morning after I got that cold email from a lead feeder competitor. And this is number, this is the last one on the list, right? Lead feeder, but for enterprise, like how Drift literally just took chatbots and made them for enterprise. This would track everyone who visits your site and then adds it to your CRM and maybe some other bells and whistles. That's literally what I wrote. Like, this is like, this is my SaaS list. Like,
I love that. Yeah.
This check is how out, my brain works. But yeah, Drift is, check, Drift is great. Drift is great.
check out Clearbit too. I think they do something similar, but everyone's got the same thing. It's just all about the marketing, man. Speaking of which, Max, if people want to get more marketing tips, more growth hack tips, anything that you're working on, where can they go and find you?
I'm Marketing Max on Twitter and TikTok. I just launched marketingmax.io, which is my website, where you can see I just launched a marketing 101 course. I put a lot of the stuff actually I talked about today into that. It's only $200. But what I'm really trying to grow now is my email list. So if you go to growthhacksweekly.com, every Sunday, I'll send you one of my best growth hacks and you could just learn for free. Just grow your business.
We'll make sure to link to everything in the show notes. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.